Welcome back to another episode of Not Even D2, the podcast covering all the narratives that matter in college sports through interviews with those involved or previously involved with college sports. If you're watching on YouTube, make sure to hit that subscribe button. If you're listening on any other platform, make sure to hit that follow button. Also, go follow our socials on Instagram and X at Not Even D2 for more college sport content. You guys definitely appreciate what we got going on our socials, and we appreciate all the support. But on today's episode, we have Ty Nichols. Ty Nichols, currently the Keene State all-time leading scorer, had a great career at Keene State, and currently plays overseas in Slovakia, and just finished the season where he averaged over 20 points in the Czech Republic, made some history in that league as well. So, I mean, just by that, you can tell that Ty is a great basketball player. And what I like more about Ty is he's an even better guy. Like, you guys can tell just through this interview, like, the vibe us three had just in this interview was high, but also just hanging around Ty and guys like Mark in the hotel, going on walks with them in Ohio. It was definitely a good trip, and we enjoyed being around those guys at the WRD3 tournament, hearing every crazy thing that Ty got to say. I mean, I can say so many things with what Ty was saying, but we'll keep that off air. And there's a lot to talk about with Ty. He's had an interesting career, so I'll let you talk about what you guys say about Ty.
So the first thing that I think is most interesting about Ty, he's a funny guy. You know, like, I think he keeps everything light, which I think is always good for, like, team morale, especially when it comes to, like, those tournaments where you don't really know each other like that and you're putting teams together at the last second and they don't really get to practice. But I'm pretty sure he said this in a conversation to us, like, he doesn't take much serious. Now, that may come off as a negative thing, but I think the most interesting thing about it is when it comes game time, like when he steps on the court, he's a hooper. I said to him, he's a gamer, right? Like, he always come to play. It's all business when he steps on the court. He's locked in. So I think that's what, like, young players can kind of take away from him and, like, see that, right? And I think the second thing that I find most interesting about him, you know, he's a D3 guy that's, you know, playing in one of the best leagues outside of the NBA / G League, right? He's playing in the Euro Cup and the Champions League with that team in Slovakia. So, like, he's putting on for D3, and he's in the position that a lot of D3 guys wish that they were in. And he started his journey with playing pro started in the midst with COVID, just like Eric Demers too. So it's kind of interesting how, like, they kind of battled through all that perseverance and made it to where they are now.
Yeah. I mean, you hit it on the head mentioning, like, Ty's a gamer. And not to say, like, anything bad about Ty, but I wasn't really familiar with his name. I mean, yeah, I watched his film before the TBT tournament just to learn more about the team and stuff. But when I watched the practice, it was like you were there a little bit earlier than me, and you were like, yo, Ty is OD, like, he's tough. And when I was watching him at practice, I was like, I'm not really seeing it. Like, obviously he's a good player. He's the all-time leading scorer at Keene State, but I wasn't, like, overly impressed. And then Coach Hastings actually said to us, like, on the sideline, he was like, Ty was probably the worst practice player I've ever seen in my career. And it's true. Like, he's just not he said it in the episode, like, I've never taken practice seriously. But when he gets on the court, like, he's taking tough shots, like pull-up threes, step-back threes, getting to the cup, shooting over footers in the paint. He can score it at all three levels. And Ty grinds, like, every day he's in the gym. You can see it on his Instagram. Or he said, like, the reason why he kept getting better at Keene State is he was just on the gun every day. And you can only respect something like that. But also what we should talk about with Ty is every stop that he's been at, he's just won. And you can say, like, oh, his teams have been good, or, you know, this happened, that happened. But two-time state champs happened. Putnam and Western Mass, and then he goes to Keene State. He wins the LEC his first 2 years in college, and now he just made history bringing his team the first ever championship in Czech Republic League history. So it's like everywhere he's gone, he's made that program a dominant in that league. So you can't take anything away from someone doing that while scoring a ton of points. And another reason why he's always been a winner is he's a great leader. And we saw this firsthand. Like, he'll go in the huddle, and instead of Coach Rainiac talking, it's like, where's Ty? Like, what does he have to say? How is he going to lift somebody up? Or a foul happens and Ty's bringing everybody together. Or a young player makes a mistake and Ty pulls him over like, yo, relax, like you're good. Like, try this next time. So when you have a player, a veteran at that, that taking you under their wing, it allows you to be that much better of a player, to get that mentorship and that vision from somebody who's been through it all. And I mean, I have a little bit more to say about Ty, but I mean, I just went on a little rant. So if you want to add anything, you can.
No, everything you said was 100% right. I mean, when you think about Ty, you think about hard work. Like just like you said, you hit it on the head with that. Like his first year at Keene State, he made under 10 threes. He went 8 for 24, 33% from the field, right? His last year, he made 69 threes, and he shot 44% from the field, which is crazy. And that's a crazy increase, right? So that means, like, if you're a freshman coming in on a team, like, and let's say shooting is your one thing you lack, like, there's ways to get better at it, right? And Ty is a perfect example of that. Another thing that I kind of find interesting about him, when we talk about, like, the D3 to D1, right, conversation, I think Ty has to be, like, one of those guys that you think of, like, he's a true pro, right? Like, this, like, I was having a conversation about, like, the D3 to D1 thing with this one kid, Isaiah. He plays at Clark, and he mentioned Ty. He was like, I've never seen one player stand in front of Ty Nichols, right? So it's kind of funny, like, the how people know him just as being a bucket. But talking more about his Keene State career, like, he played 4 years at Keene State, right? And his last year at Keene, he averaged 27 a game on 50% shooting. That is crazy, bro. Those are crazy numbers for any player, Division I, Division II, Division III. And, like, when we think about how COVID kind of changed the transfer portal for all levels, like, Ty's one of those guys where it's like, if he had the fifth year, he could have probably played at a mid to high major level, right? Or how D3 to D1 is becoming more and more popular today, what would have been like if it was more popular, 7 years ago when he was playing? So it's just an interesting conversation with Ty, and it was a great episode. Like you said, bro, the vibes were high, especially in person. I'm excited for everyone to watch this.
Nah, yeah, definitely like what you just said. And the final thing that I want to mention about Ty is he has a chip on his shoulder. Like, oftentimes when we have people on the podcast that went Division III, they talk about their recruitment process like, yeah, I thought I was Division I, or I could have went Division I, but I decided, like, I wanted to stay Division III and kill. But Ty, like, he was struggling to get Division III looks. And that's after winning two state championships and having good years in high school. He still wasn't being highly recruited. So that's one chip on his shoulder. And then he actually talks about this, like, just being Division III, that's a chip on his shoulder in itself. And he carries that to this day. So when he sees a Division I guard against him, like, he was playing against Eric Washington, who played high major Division I on Heartfire, and it was like, nah, I'm trying to go at this guy. Like, he can't check me. He was playing against Tevin Mack, wanted to stop in front of him, and then it's like, nah, you can get work too. You went to Clemson and Bama. Nah, it's still up for you. So, like you said, anybody who steps in front of Ty, like, no glaze or anything, but he's a cup that can score on them. And, I mean, we talk about a lot with Ty, where he got this scoring bag from, what it was like leading Keene State to two NCAA tournament appearances, a little bit about those runs. And then finally, some of his goals, he's a older guy playing overseas. What goals he has? He said something crazy about the goals he has the next few years. So let's hear from Ty. And yo, Ty, you definitely better get going on this deal we made, or else you're going to be owing me $50. So let's hear from Ty. And
enjoy the episode. Real quick, before we end it, I got a quick question for all the Keene State guys watching, and they could either put it in the comments or text one of us individually. What team is better? The team that made it to the Elite Eight, like Ty's team, or the team that won like 15 games in a row that me and Jeff talk about? I think the year was 2022, 2023. For the team I'm talking about, and for Ty, I think it was the 2017 year, if I'm not mistaken, where they went to the Elite Eight. It was there because that was the year that Babson won. So what team is better? And I'm really interested to hear what the Keene State guys say, because both teams are loaded with talent. So just a conversation that we got to start.
I like that. So let's hear from Ty. All right, we're here with Ty Nichols. How you doing today, my guy?
Good, how y'all?
Chilling, bro.
Chilling, bro. We've been playing this for a couple of days now. Appreciate you doing this.
No doubt. Appreciate y'all having me, man.
So this episode is going to be released after we're all together at the TBT, but I'm just kind of curious, like, what's the most mentally challenging part about playing in, like, a basketball tournament?
I would just say staying locked in the whole time you're in the tournament, you know what I'm saying? Because sometimes you'll get a win, like how we got yesterday. You know, we were happy, we celebrated. But then sometimes you just got locked back in because you play the next day or the day after next. So it's like staying mentally locked in will probably be the hardest thing. Other than that, it's basketball. I've been playing basketball your whole life. So, I mean, just be used to, you know, playing in front of crowds or playing in front of nobody. You know what I'm saying? You got to get used to different atmospheres and stuff like that. But mentally, yeah, it's probably the biggest aspect of the TBT.
Do you think, like, because I remember you saying you were talking about something about the fouls. You were just like, they got to stop calling these fouls, man. Street ball. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So is that kind of like an adjustment from you, from like the pro game to playing in like these like cash tournaments and stuff like that?
Yeah. So coming out of college, I had played in my first money tournament, and I kind of got used to how pros play and the physicality of the street game. And then, I just kind of, went through the phases of my life, and I finally found a contract, and I went to go see how real pros play the game. And then I come back, you know, in the summer, and you guys see on Instagram and everything, I play in these money tournaments all the time. So, you know, the only difference between those and the TBT is kind of more, I wouldn't say there's better players, because you'll see some of the same TBT players playing the tournaments that I play in. I would say it's just more organized as far as the business side goes, but other than that, it's the same level, you know, pro-level talent. You know, you're playing for money, and obviously you're playing for a bigger sum in the TBT, so that could be added pressure onto you. But other than that, yeah, I mean, the street tournaments help me when it comes to these TBT tournaments, and like you said about the fouls, you know, the refs don't let you play a couple times, but then when it's late in the game like that, you can't call certain things, you know what I mean? You just got to let the players play.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, refs going to do their job. Everybody's just trying to, you know, get a better job out of the TBT, so
right. I feel like.
Word. So I want to like go back to your childhood. You're from Springfield, Massachusetts, and you and your mom had like this interview I was watching on YouTube, and you were kind of talking about this childhood, and I heard some things. You were in the inner city of Springfield, so there's those type of distractions like drugs, murder. You actually lost your father at a young age, rest in peace to him. And you spent some time in shelters, just you and your mom. So just talk a little about your childhood and kind of how that impacted you as a person today.
So growing up, my mom had seven kids, and I was the eighth. So I got five brothers and two sisters. I'm the youngest. And then I had lost my dad when I was four. Yeah, I got hit by a car. And then, from there, my mom just basically had to raise all of us by herself. You know, she didn't have no help. Struggling to find jobs, stuff like that. And then basically, yeah, we were staying in shelters. You know, some of my older siblings would go stay with my aunt, my uncles. And it'd just be me and my mom, we're staying in shelter. One time we slept under the bridge. There's like a whole article on Google about it and everything. So, it was rough growing up. You know, my mom got us through it. That's why I love her. And growing up without a dad is tough, especially when you're growing up with five other boys, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You don't want a mom to raise all your boys. So, you know, growing up without a dad was definitely tough, but, you know, we made it through. You know, we're here now.
Like, so did any of your siblings have like the biggest impact on you, just like, you know, as a role model and whatnot growing up?
Yeah, 100%. My brother Mark, he's a track and field athlete. He has like, you know, most of the records in our city or whatever, but he was mainly the dude I looked up to because my other brothers are in the streets. I got one other brother that's in the military, but you know, other than that, they're doing negative things, so I never wanted to look up to them, you know what I'm saying? But Mark for sure, he kept me focused, you know, kept me in the sporting world, took me wherever I needed to go. So, I mean, yeah, definitely shout out to him.
Word.
How did you kind of balance, or how do you have those conversations with your brothers? Because you just said it's a negative thing. How do you tell them, like, straight up, like, you're doing something that's not good for you? And how did you kind of stay out the way knowing, like, you're focused on the basketball?
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're your siblings, so they're going to respect your decision. Being around him, I kind of just try to stay around him wherever he will go. And then just growing up with my friends, they also play sports, so that kind of, you know, kept me focused. But other than that, I mean, you just gotta be smart. You gotta make the right decision in life. And fortunately for me, I was able to.
Word. So just reading a little bit about you, bro. You were a two-time state champ and a three-time Western Mass champ. So first thing I'm wondering, you've seen a lot of hoopers just like playing basketball for a long time. I know you played in Shoe City. You played in tournaments in like Lowell and whatnot. Do you think Mass got some of like the best hoopers just around, you know, Northeast or even in the States?
I would say in the last 10 years for sure. You know, we got a couple of NBA players that come out and have successful careers in the NBA. You know, we got a couple of young guys who are, you know, trying to make the right decision right now and do the same thing that the older guys did. So, I mean, I would say for sure we're top 10. You know, we're more of a football type of state, I would say. But as far as basketball, I would say the last 10 years for sure. All right.
So you went to Putnam, right?
Yep.
One of your teammates, I was reading, Dazelle Wright, you guys went to high school, Putnam together, and he went on like the last 38 games, he was 38-0. You guys won 2 state champs, and he was also a really good player. He ended up committing to Keene State. Yep. So I was just wondering, like, was that part of the influence and you committing to Keene State, and just talk about Dazelle and your relationship?
Yeah, Dazelle's my guy, man. We still talk to this day. Yeah, I mean, he was just athletic. You know, he was small, but he probably had the most bounce on our team. He was physically strong, so, you know, he was a solid player for us. And then as far as going to Keene, like I said, like I told you guys off camera, I didn't really have too many offers coming out of high school. So it was either Keene, Fitchburg, or Rhode Island College. I just kind of, you know, narrowed it down to Keene because the coach that got hired there, Ryan Keene, we're still friends to this day, so shout out to him as well. But, yeah, that's kind of why I went there. And then Dazelle played a little role in it. Although he didn't take basketball as serious as I wanted him to. But, yeah, he played a role in it. Shout out to him for sure.
Talk a little bit about your relationship with Coach Keene. I mean, Jeff talks highly of Coach Keene. They said he talks, like, every day. And a lot of people just talk highly about him and his character. So just talk a little bit about that.
You know, when he got hired at Keene, he was still young. Mm. You know what I'm saying? He was pretty much fresh off of playing. He was the all-time leading scorer at WPI. So we kind of could relate in that aspect as far as basketball. But as far as basketball, I could relate to him. He was just an easy guy to talk to, you know what I mean? Everybody on the team sat down with him before he got hired, and then you know, from there we just took off. Mm-hmm. We had very successful years, and when I was at Keene.
So the interview that I was talking about earlier with your mom, she was actually talking about Coach Keene and saying that, like, when you were younger, like, early in college, you weren't the easiest person to kind of coach. So, just talk about your early years and how your demeanor has changed.
Yeah, I got a funny story about that, actually. My first game ever in a Keene State uniform, I was late to the bus. The bus left me. I had to wait for an assistant coach to come back and get me. So I showed up to the game about 1 hour before it started, and he yelled at me. Obviously, I deserved it. But, yeah, other than that, man, it came...
Wait. So, nothing's changed, though, because you be walking into the TBT practices.
Like... Today wasn't my fault, but I'm not even going to talk about it. But, yeah, man, I'm not going to lie, I'm a horrible practice player. Horrible practice person.
Gamer, though.
Yeah, I like to show up and play, man. That's just what I do. I don't really take practice too serious. I have never took practice too serious since high school. So, I mean, fortunately for me, I was able to, you know, make it as far as I made it so far. Mm-hmm. You know, shout out to God as well, because, you know, you can't really do much without him. So, you know, I mean, as far as Keene goes, man, he's probably the best guy I've ever met in my life. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? He looks out for me. I was behind in college on financial aid, and he looked out for me for that. Yeah, he did things like that for me. So, you know what I mean? Shout out to him.
Nah, word. You don't really see that from a lot of coaches nowadays, bro. And that's real. And, you know, talking a little bit more about your freshman year, you said this yourself, so I'm not pulling this out of nowhere, but you were like, I was ass back in high school, and I don't know if I'm believing that, because you were 2-time state champ and Western Mass champ. But one thing I noticed, you shot less than you had your lowest attempts from threes your freshman year, and I'm wondering, now I'm seeing you, like, watching the TBT games, like, you're shooting pull up threes, or, you know, just making difficult shots from the three. So was that something that you just added to your bag as you got older?
Yeah, so like I told you, I started playing basketball late. I didn't really start playing until 10th grade, so I kind of didn't get the hang of it. Mm-hmm. So it just took me a little bit. But then the high school I went to, it wasn't iso ball. It was just real press the whole game, get steals. You know, I was athletic. I was young, so I had energy. You know what I'm saying? So I just did that, and that kind of worked out for us.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we had went 25-0 my junior year. And we went 24-1 my sophomore year. And my senior year, I lost 5 games. So I lost 6 games all of high school, and then, you know, without shooting threes. Then I get to college my freshman year. I'm still playing the same way, you know, just defense, trying to get steals, score the ball that way. And then I stayed up at school for the summer. I didn't come home. And Kane had ordered a shooting gun.
Mm-hmm.
And that just kind of changed the way I played the game. Mm-hmm. The shooting gun, I just got 500 makes a day, every day in the summer. There was nothing else to do.
There's nothing to do up
there. So I'm just in the gym all day with the shooting gun.
Yeah.
And that definitely changed my game for sure. Without that, I'd probably still be the same. I'd probably be done playing, to be honest.
It's because I feel like sometimes when you... And this is maybe I'm bugging, but I feel like sometimes when you look at like top scorers, sometimes like people will look at them and be like, oh, you know, maybe the one thing that's holding them back is like they're not as good as a defender, right?
Mm.
But you're saying now that like you started how you made your way onto the college basketball scenes by playing defense. So I find that just kind of interesting that you're able to be like a two-way player.
For sure. Yeah, growing up, like I said, I had energy. I was young, athletic, or whatever. Yeah. So, you know, I just wanted to play. I wanted to steal the ball as much as I could, so I played defense. I mean, everybody around me played defense. Like I said, we would press the whole game. So that kind of got me by my high school career. And, it just worked for us, man. Defense is the most crucial part of basketball. You can score as many points as you want, but if you can't stop the other team, someone's going to outscore someone.
Nice.
So, I mean, yeah, defense is definitely crucial. And then just going through the years, going through college, the pro ranks, I just kind of slacked off a little bit, not too much. But, I still play defense when needed for sure.
So another thing I'm kind of wondering is, you said like you hit a few game winners in your high school career, and then you're doing this in college, and now like on the We Are D3 team. What is it about you that just likes, like Ruda mentioned, you're a gamer. What is it about you that just always appreciates that those big time moments?
I just think playing with that chip on my shoulder, you know, coming from a Division III program, we're always overlooked. So it's like you just always have that chip on your shoulder, whether you think you deserve something or not. You always got it right there, so you got to play like that at all times. And you know, late in the game, pressure moments, you know, I kind of got comfortable with, you know, having the ball in my hand. You know, and some of the guys on the team I've never met before, but, you know, through social media and Instagram clips, they've seen that I'm able to handle late game situations, so they trust me with it.
Mm.
And, yeah, man, it's amazing. When you do make the shot, it's amazing. You know what I'm saying? Everybody's happy for you. But when you miss, nobody, you know what I'm saying? Nobody, why'd you take that shot?
Yeah, yeah.
So you just kind of balance it out. But, yeah, at the end of the day, man, I'll always take the last shot. I love it. I love the pressure.
It's funny you say that, because I remember, I forget the year, man, but it was when the Heat lost to the Celtics and when they went to the finals. I think it was in 2022, if I'm not mistaken, when they played the Warriors. But Jimmy Butler had a chance to shoot a three at the end. It was a pull-up three, and he missed it. But everyone on Miami side, they weren't mad at it, because it's like, if you have a chance to get your best player a shot at the end, make or miss, you're gonna live with that shot, you know. And like, for example, you guys scrimmaged Dayton a couple of days before the game, and you did have a chance to knock that down. It literally went inside the rim and out.
I'm not jacking.
You
wasn't here, right?
Nah. But you literally had a shot, but like no one was like tight, like, oh yo, why you take that shot? It was just like, nah, like we're gonna live with that, bro. That was a good ass look, and sometimes they go in, sometimes they don't. So.
No, like I said, man, you gotta live with the good, gotta live with the bad.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out my teammates for trusting me, for sure.
Word.
But yeah, gotta live with the good and the bad.
So last question before we go to break. You know, just one thing I'm wondering about, looking at that same tournament, you guys played Babson that same year, just later in the tournament. I believe it was in the Elite Eight, if I'm not mistaken. And Babson ended up winning the national championship that year. And it was kind of like a, you know, one-sided game. But you had a good game yourself. So just talk about like your mindset that game, and also did you expect that Babson was gonna end up winning the Natty after that?
Yeah, that was a crazy season. The year before, we had went to the Sweet 16 my freshman year.
Mm-hmm.
We had lost to Christopher Newport, and then my sophomore year we played them again in the Sweet 16. We had beat them. You know, we were just on a run.
Mm-hmm.
We made a run at the right time, got hot at the right time, and I'm thinking whoever wins this game against Babson is gonna go on to win a national championship.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we were playing a guy, I don't know if you remember him, Joey Flannery.
Yeah.
He was the best player in Division III at the time,
yep.
Like 2,500 mm-hmm. points. So you know, it was a tough task. We were in their gym. They packed it out. Probably had like 50 fans there for us. So, I mean, it was a tough environment to play in, bro. But, I mean, yeah, like you said, it was a one-sided game. They were more mature than us. You know, I was only a sophomore. You know, they just played better that day. But it was definitely a great experience to get to the Elite Eight. You know, not many kids even get to make it to the tournament, let alone the Elite Eight. So, I mean, yeah, good experience. But I would say I didn't see Babson winning that championship, because there was a team, I want to say their name was Whitman or something like that. One of those teams out there in Nevada,
mm-hmm.
and they were undefeated.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the team that Babson had beat in the national championship that year.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
They were either undefeated or they had one loss, but I thought they were going to win the championship for sure. But shout out to Babson, man. Still hate y'all.
Nah, word. I don't fuck with Babson. To this day. Even though we beat them in the first round of the tournament my sophomore year, and it was, you know, I mean, they're a good program, but yeah, we definitely, I was definitely happy to get that win, bro.
For sure. Thank you for doing that.
Man, got his get back for bro.
For sure.
But stay with us. We're going to take a break and talk about you being the all-time leader in scoring in Keene State history.
So we're back. So a little quick thing, man, looking at your scoring averages on a year-to-year basis, you improved every year, your years at Keene, right? Your scoring averages. And you talked about how you stayed up there for one summer and got your shot right. And, you know, I think I said at the beginning of the episode, like, I'm already knowing that you played in those, like, outdoor tournaments and stuff like that. So just talk about your process and how you really got better in the off seasons.
Yeah, like I said, in my freshman year, I came in. We kind of had a great roster at the time. So I was kind of fast first point guard, score when I can, steals and stuff like that. And then I stayed up there for that summer, like I had told you. Mm-hmm. And I just changed the way I played the game. I think I went from 12.8 to 18, something like that.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, from there, I just got more comfortable. You know, we all obviously lost six seniors going into my junior. Yeah, six of them. So I just had to take a bigger role. And, you know, obviously we didn't bring in the best freshmen. So I just had to, you know, do what I could to get my team some wins. And fortunately for me, I was able to score some points.
Bro, you're like actually a really crafty guard, and someone who doesn't believe in like weightlifting or something like that, is you really have to be able to score all three levels, have it on the string, all of that. So who were some of the players that when you were growing up that you were watching, like, I wanted my game to mirror him, or some of the moves you were taking? Talk to me about that.
My favorite player to watch growing up was Jamal Crawford. Easily, you know, he's just so shifty. He's skinny like me, probably has like 2 or 3 inches on me though, but just watching the way that he gets his shots off, he gets to his spots, he's not really worried about the defense. You know, I just kind of wanted to take some things from his game and add it to mine. And like I said, when I was able to, you know, get on the shooting gun and improve my form and improve my jump shot, it just kind of made me, you know, try to play like him a little bit more. You know, and another guy I obviously looked up to was Allen Iverson, you know, as much as other kids do. But, you know, I have a poster on my wall at home. I've had it since I was like six of him. So, I mean, he's one of my goats in my top five for sure. So him and Jamal Crawford were two of the guys that I just tried to model my game after, you know, a skinny type guard that doesn't play point guard. And, you know, I mean, you know, fortunately for me, I was able to, you know, kind of take some things from Jamal Crawford, just kind of trying to get around bigger defenders and stuff like that. You got to kind of use different things. So, I mean, yeah, Jamal Crawford, Allen Iverson for sure.
We're gonna talk more about your Keene State career, but one thing I'm just quick thought, watching their game against Sweet Home Alabama, you know, you're coming off screens and you're putting the defender in jail, and like you're surveying, you know, what's in front of you. And sometimes you're taking a little shot or you're throwing a lob or dishing it out in the corner. So you're kind of playing with a little bit of patience. And, you know, without really knowing, you know, all your film from your 4-year career, how do you think you kind of developed that type of poise in your game? Or you feel like you've always had that?
To a certain extent, I kind of always had that. I would kind of speed myself up in college a lot and create turnovers for myself. But just playing against pros and, you know, seeing how guys move at their own pace and play at their own speed, I just kind of, like, picked up on it. You know what I mean? Just got to kind of go through it to pick up on it. So, I mean, yeah, just playing against the guys, like the street tournaments. You know, you see guys who are pros who played in the NBA before, played high-level Division I. They'll come back to these street tournaments, and you expect it to be fast-paced, but they're playing at their own speed still, just because that's how they were groomed, you know, playing against other pro athletes. So that's kind of what I do. I mean, you know, just kind of got to go through it, you know, play at your own speed. Can't get sped up.
So now that you're finished with your career at Keene State, what is it like for you seeing guys like Jeff, Octavio continue that dominance? Like you said, you made the tournament your freshman and sophomore year at Keene, and now they're on a three-peat and looking for more. So what is that like for you? Just do you support or do you not support, but do you still like go to the games, watch their games like that? Just talk about
shit. If I could fly from Europe, I definitely would go to some games. Nah. But yeah, I mean, I obviously know the guys. You know, I watch some of the games when I can overseas. I'm at a time difference though, about 6 hours ahead of everybody. So sometimes I'll stay up if it's a big game and watch it. But yeah, shout out to those guys, man. They're going for the first four-peat in Keene State history. So that's huge. You know, they brought in a new coach this year, so it's going to make it more special if they can do it for him his first year. And, yeah, Octavio is obviously a killer. You know, he's a really good player. I think he was trying to move up E1 this year, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I think he was looking around, but I think he's staying at Keene.
Okay. Yeah, so, I mean, he's a very high-level Division III player, you know what I mean? And Jeff, obviously, is one of the best players in Keene State history, so they had a good nucleus. You know, they returned a couple guys this year, so they're... I hope they win the four-peat, but at the same time, you know, you can't take anything lightly, can't take anything for granted, so it's got to continue to work.
Word. One thing that I was kind of noticing as well is in the TBT practices, now that Jeff's on the team, it seems like, I don't want to say this, but you're almost like his big bro. Mm-hmm. So do you ever, like, talk to them, and what are those relationships mm-hmm. like, being, like, the big bro?
Yeah, just kind of, I mean, yeah. I'm the big bro.
Nah, you little bro in here, but...
4 inches, bro. I mean, but nah, seriously, yeah, I mean, look, playing with Jeff is like a, kind of like a dream come true. Mm. You know what I mean? Two of the best players in the history of your school program, that doesn't happen often, that you get to play on a pro-level tournament with him, you know what I mean? So it's kind of special in that regard. Other than that, yeah, I'll get into him. You know, I'll try to teach him things here and there, and he's teaching me things as well. You know, I can still learn a lot of things about the game of basketball. So, you know, we're just kind of, you know, feeding off each other. I'm just trying to get him used to playing high level basketball, becoming a professional, you know what I mean? So, you know, in the game, I don't even know if you guys seen it. His first play when he got in the game, he had gave up a rebound. Mm-hmm. And that was the first one to yell at him, like 100%. You know, you just can't have that. If you want to play professionally, you want to make money playing the game you love, you can't do things like that. You got to do what you're great at. He's great at rebounding. You can't give up a rebound to this person. Mm, yeah. So I got into him, you know what I mean? So, I mean, and he took it, you know, as a professional would take it, and he said, all right, I got you. And that was it. But I'm on Jeff as much as I can, for sure.
I was gonna say, cause I think I showed you a clip of you guys in the huddle, and like you and Jeff were sitting next to each other, and like you pat him on the back of the head, and you were like said something like you're good or something like that. So I see that, you know, like love you probably have for him, you know what I'm saying? And like you're saying, it is special to play with a guy that are probably the two best Keene State players of all time. So to play, like you said, on a, you know, pro tournament like this is crazy. You know, I want to circle back about, because we haven't really talked about this, I want to circle back about your Keene career, and you're the all-time leading scorer in Keene State history. So just walk us through, like, that year that you broke it, if that was something on your radar, and just, you know, your emotions when that happened, man.
Yeah. So after my junior year, I was standing at, like, 1,500, I want to say.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thinking about transferring to the school in our state, UMass.
Mm-hmm.
I knew the coach over there. He's going to allow me to walk on and try to earn a scholarship. But I just kind of wanted to break that record. You know, it wasn't broken for, I want to say, 40 years going into that season. So I just kind of wanted to do that for myself. And I kind of knew that, you know, I would be able to play professionally after, because I had signed with an agent midway through my senior year. So he was kind of talking me through it. He's like, you know, just stay in school, you know, stay at Keene, break the record. I'll try to find you a job after. I was more comfortable.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that season just, it was amazing. I was just scoring at a rapid pace.
27 a game.
Yeah, it was ridiculous, bro. And then my teammates just kept feeding me the ball. I'm like, all right, I'm going to keep shooting it. So, I mean, yeah, man, that season was special. You know, it didn't end the way I wanted it to end, but, you know, I broke a lot of records that year, and I'm so grateful that I was able to do that, for sure.
Word. Do you remember anything about, like, that last point or anything?
Mm-hmm. I took a step back from the corner, I think it was. I always remember my buckets, for sure. I took a step back from the corner, and then, you know, my teammates mobbed me or whatever. Mm-hmm. You know how it goes.
Yeah. Nah, he definitely remembers every cup. We were watching film. I was showing him highlights, and he was like, oh, yeah, I remember this. Like, mm-hmm. So I respect that. But you mentioned that you had an agent, and now you're playing professionally, and you played in the Czech Republic. You averaged, like, what, over 30 a game this past year?
This past year, no, it was 20.1, but I scored 1,000.
Oh, yeah. That's what, mm-hmm. You scored a ton of points, but it's a long season in Europe, so just talk about, like, that season, what you have to go through day to day, and a little about more about your season.
It's kind of like, you know, when you go to Europe, as long as you don't get homesick, I feel like you'll be able to make it through that 8 to 10 month span. That's like the biggest thing, missing your people from back home. And obviously you're gonna miss people here and there, but you gotta understand it's your job. You know, you're getting paid to do what you love, and you're able to travel with it. So it's like, you know, you can't really complain about that, you know. And a lot of things people don't know about overseas basketball is your money's not taxed, so you're getting everything.
Mm.
You can bring it back, or you can transfer however you wanna do it, but it's not taxed. The team's paying for your house, your car. So it's like, you're not really spending nothing. So it's like, why would you pass that up just because you miss your friend from back home?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, the biggest thing about playing overseas is, like I said, the mental aspect. You know, it just can't be homesick. And I feel like you'll make it through. And then the season, as far as the season checks, it's a very good league. You know, they got Champions League teams, Europe Cup teams, you know, teams that play in these international competitions, and I'm able to play against them. I was over there for about 2.5 years, and I played in the chip both years. And then this past year was very special because the team I played on, they never had a medal. Like, mm-hmm. they didn't win a silver, bronze, gold.
So, first cup in program history.
So, first medal for the team in their history. And, you know, it was a special season. The teammates trust me again. You know, I found the ball in my hands a lot. And I was able to put up some points.
Yeah. So, like, looking at the timeline of your professional career, too, COVID hit, like, in the middle of, like, your pretty much your journey, or at the start of your professional journey. So what was that like, just like that type of roadblock, you know, to your dreams?
Yeah, nah, COVID was a crazy time because it was my first year. And I had struggled to find a deal coming out of college, even though I had signed with an agent mm-hmm. early. So I had got to Europe about 2 months late, and I was able to play over there for about 5. And then COVID had came. I'm like, damn, if I struggle to get this deal, COVID just hit. Now everyone's going to struggle to get a deal. Now I'm the last on the list, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. But I just kept the faith. I stayed in the gym. You know, I fired that agent and got a new agent. And then from there, it's been good for me. I've been able to find deals pretty much in the countries that I've been wanting to play in. So
that's fire.
Yeah, appreciate it.
So now you're like getting older. I'm not sure what your goals are with like getting a wife, getting married, stuff like that. But how much do you take?
Why are you trying to dig in my personal life?
My fault. I mean, we did start with like the most serious shit. So, but how much of that goes into your thought process on where you want to play? Like, where would my kids grow up? Where am I gonna meet my wife?
I do want to have a kid within the next year, for sure. Mm. I just feel like having a kid, be able to travel the world with you and see these things early in life, it gives them a better life. I just feel like, because I wasn't able to do certain things, I want to provide my kid with, you know, certain things. So definitely while I'm still playing and traveling in Europe, I would definitely like to have a kid. As far as the wife part goes, I don't know about that. I'm against marriage.
Me too,
that's
bro.
That's a subject.
Thank you, bro. I've been saying that.
But yeah, man, definitely the kid part, because I want my kid to experience all of this. I want him to see all of this. Even if he might not remember it, you know, it's just good to have him there and pictures and stuff like that. So, yeah, for sure.
I mean, bro, I love that you said that, bro, because just, you know, as, you know, young minority kids just don't really get to travel like that. You know what I'm saying? Like, and we're going to talk about this later, like your advice. And I think KJ has a question about that, but I just love that sentiment, you know what I'm saying? Because I said this in our, you know, one of our other episodes. Like, I've never been, you know, outside of the Northeast, really. I've been to Puerto Rico, that's where I'm from. But outside of that, I've never really traveled the world like that. And that's something that I want to do. So for you to be traveling the world right now and then want to bring someone and bring a child in the world and for them to see that, I respect you big time for that, bro.
I appreciate that, bro.
Yeah.
So kind of to wrap things up, we talked earlier, you were like brought up in the inner city, a ton of distractions. You've been through a lot of adversity throughout your early stages of life, your career, even today. So what advice would you have for kids dealing, like growing up with those societal pressures, distractions, gangs, stuff like that, and especially minority kids? What advice would you have for them?
There's only two things that come out of being in the streets, you know, it's jail or death. You know what I'm saying?
Pick one.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if you want to go to jail, you want to die, or you want to have a successful sporting career. And it doesn't have to be sports, you know, kids, minorities can do a lot of different things, you know what I mean? So I would just say staying level-headed, man, and just being mentally strong and just making the right decision, man. I mean, some kids, obviously, they go through things and they just can't change the circumstances around them. But I mean, for the most part, I feel like everybody, you know, they have a decision to make and they can make it on their own. Some people are peer pressured into other decisions. So, I mean, it's got to be mentally strong, man. Got to stay level headed.
Yeah, nah, I definitely like that. Like, at some point, it's on you to make your own decision.
All right. So this is not really like a rapid fire question, but I'm just wondering this. You said this to me. You were like, I don't take none serious, bro. I just like joke around. You know what I'm saying? So explain where you kind of got that, you know, mindset from.
My brother was, one of my brothers was a jokester.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So I just kind of,
but you kind of
took it from him. He's hating.
Yeah.
But anyway, my brother was a jokester, and I just kind of got it from him. And like I said, I'm in Europe for damn near 9 to 10 months. Yeah. I'm not trying to come back to the States and be serious every goddamn day, you know what I'm saying? So try to joke as much as I can, for sure.
Word. All right, next rapid fire question. During your time at Keene, who was someone outside of like anyone involved with the basketball team or athletics that had like a big impact on you?
Outside of Keene?
Mm-hmm.
My mom, for sure.
Oh, like I'm saying outside of like
the basketball.
Like anyone at Keene State that like helped you.
But still, shout out my Dukes.
Yeah, for sure.
My Dukes, for sure.
For sure.
I don't know, bro. I had one professor at Keene,
and he was like, if you want to leave class to go to your game right now, go ahead. And he said, listen, you ain't got to come to class no more. If you got a game that day, don't come to class. So shout out to him. Mm-hmm. I forget his name, though. No bullshit. Yeah, shout out to him, man.
All right, and then last rapid fire question. I guess you can name more than one if you want, but who are some players in Division III that you were like, damn, okay, like they're really like that, like they're tough.
Like I told you, one, Joey Flannery, mm-hmm. He's so tough to guard, 6'5" guard in Division III. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
You were checking him?
Trying to, but yeah, he got the best of me. There was a card at Christopher Newport. Marcus Carter.
He was tough.
He was really good. Who else did I play in college? Carlos Gonzalez from Eastern. He's a really good point guard. I would say the best Division III player I probably played. There's a point guard at Amherst the time we had beat them in the tournament. I forget his name. Something Dawson.
Okay.
He's probably the best Division III player I played. Just so professional. He had like a professional feel to his game. So, I mean, yeah, those four for sure.
So this is kind of like off track a little bit from rapid fire, but quick thought that I wanted you to speak on. You're obviously playing pro for the last couple of years now, and you're playing in these money tournaments. And obviously, yeah, like we are D3, and like we know that Division III has a lot of good hoopers. But just talk about what you've seen from Division III in terms of, you know, other levels and the skill level and, you know, now playing overseas.
I don't see much between Division III and Division I. Besides size, you know what I'm saying? You'll have a 6'6 center in Division III, you'll have a 7-footer in college. But as far as guard play goes, I feel like guards can play with guards, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's basketball, anything can happen at any time. So I definitely feel like the guards in Division III can play at any level.
Mm-hmm.
It's just about getting exposure, getting their foot in the door.
Word.
Nah, yeah. And like the best division, because collectively, like the size is a problem, but when I'm watching you guys play against like Sweet Home Alabama, they had a roster full of Division I kids, and at each position, I was like, I like us in that situation. So it's really like starting to become more of a thing. People are starting to see it. But we're gonna end this episode with a starting five edition. So if you're a coach assembling a lineup 1 through 5, who's your lineup gonna be? And this edition is gonna be the craftiest or like something unique about their game. So 1 through 5. Who you got, and just tell me a little about this player and what, like, where they hooped at, what was so good about
as
them.
Far as what, like NBA, college, like, what are we doing?
Anything, bro.
I'm gonna go NBA right now. I'm gonna put Bobo at the 5,
bro. Thank you. Yo, why is he not on it?
He's different, bro.
Why is he not playing more? Like,
Wimby before Wimby. Yeah.
Thank you.
But yeah, I'm gonna go Bobo at the 5 for sure. This is gonna shock a lot of people at the 4. Don Maker,
I'm not jacking that.
Not jacking Don.
But talk to me. But
think about it, bro. If you grab Bobo and Don, put them at the 5 and the 4, and then you run a 2-3 zone, you're good. You're good. I feel like you're good. But at the 3, it gets a little weirder. Jonathan Isaac.
Nah, that's a good pick. That's a good 6.
I feel like he's the best defender in the league.
Yeah,
when
that's a good pick.
100%,
that's a good pick.
100%. But like again, it's length. Mm-hmm. He's 7 feet. Put him at the top of the zone. We good money. 2, Jamal Crawford for sure. Definitely throwing him in at the 1. I got to throw AI.
100%. Yo, that lineup is tough.
It's going to go crazy. AI don't got to worry about nothing. You got 3 8-footers down there. Yeah. Like, come on.
But like a shooting team might blick y'all out.
You think so? We could switch everything.
But y'all run the zone or what you mean?
Nah, we'll go, man. We can switch everything. We got 7-footers. Switching on to 7-footers. Like, what are we doing?
I respect that, but... Appreciate you joining us, bro. We definitely appreciate you joining on the pod. It's been a good episode, and looking forward to seeing what you do in the future.
Appreciate
and hopefully, Pop Tie, Dad Tie comes out in the next year,
man.
Or two.
The next year, man, for sure. If I don't have a kid in the next year, I'll give KJ $50.
We're locked.
Good luck.
Y'all see. Well, appreciate you, and good luck with the game tomorrow, bro.
Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks for tuning in to another episode of Not Even D2. If you haven't already, make sure to go follow all the socials at Not Even D2. You can catch every episode on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. I'm your host, KJ Allison, and I'll see you next episode.